Hey there, and welcome back to the Mini Weekend. I'm your host, Jack. Let's get back into it, Mini. We're changing up a couple of things this week, so we're just going to jump right into it. Tommytown, that actually leads us to our first question of the week. Ellen wants to know, Jack, college hockey, what's going on? Has it already started? And thank you, Ellen, for the question. As you know, if you've listened before, I would assume you would be, you have because you asked a question this week. But the hockey teams are usually, for the Tommies, are usually the first teams we like to kind of go over. Unfortunately, the men's team has not gotten underway yet. This upcoming weekend, on the 7th and 8th, they will be opening the season with a home-and-home series to start off the year against the St. Cloud State Huskies. Low and short, that's a short answer for the men's team. Looking at a little bit of history between the two teams, aside from the damage to the boat, which we will fix, a little bit of a stepbrothers quote there, but no, pretty similar. You know, aside from that first game against St. Cloud State and their essential D1 opener, they lost at the XL Energy Center 12-2. Aside from that game, they have played them pretty close. The day, you know, their second Division I game of the era, they only lost 2-0. And then last year, they played them in another home-and-home series as well and lost 1-3 and 0-4, which, you know, again, are, you know, decent games, especially for a team that made a jump like we've talked about for, you know, the third year now from Division III to Division I. It's no easy feat, but to be able to say that, you know, you're playing a tough team like this that close is honorable. I know we talk about, you know, there's no such thing as really a moral victory, but hey, you sometimes when you're this early in an era, you have to hang your hat on something. And with this being, you know, the third season in the Division I era, and with St. Cloud State being currently the nation's number 8 team, if the Tommies are able to steal a close 1-0, 2-1 game, whether in regulation or in overtime, that would be huge for the program, especially with some of the transfer students coming in. I'm very, very, very interested to see how this team does this year. Obviously, you know, a lot of what we talked about last year was the how big of a step they took from year one to year two with getting, you know, with going with going from, you know, a 3-32-1 record all the way up to an 11-23-2 record, with a lot of those losses coming from a 1-2 goal game. I'm really interested to see how this, you know, pans out for them, especially with, you know, a lot of the teams in their conference pegging them to finish tied for number 5th. So, super interested to see how they're you know, the first 2 weeks, they're going to have their work cut out for them. They have, you know, they're going up against a top St. Cloud State team, this weekend. They open up the season Saturday at 6 p.m. Right now, it doesn't look like it's being broadcasted anywhere. And that'll be in St. Cloud. And then Sunday at 4:07, they will be in Mendota Heights. If you want to go see that one, in person, you could do so. And that'll be on Sunday. And then you're going up against the national runner-up the very next weekend in the Minnesota Gophers, October 13th and 14th. So they'll have their work cut out for them, and then after that, it should, all things considered, get a little easier as they take on Lindenwood, Bemidji State, Northern Michigan, and then kind of get into the CCHA play until the end of December, when they will take a trip to Vermont. And Yeah, that's what I have for the men's team. As for the women's team, Ellen, they actually got off to a hot start. They did start this last weekend, and they got the season sweep. They're currently 2-0-0 on the season, beating Franklin Pierce, 7-2 on Friday, and then 5-2 on Saturday. And really, a big weekend for them. Ella Berger led the team with 3 goals. She was one of only 2 Tommies with multi goals in the series. Abby Promsberger was the only other one with more than 1 goal. And then what is it? Ella Berger and Riley Bartz were the 2 tied for the most points through the first series with 4 apiece. Ella obviously had 4 points on 3 goals, whereas Riley had 4 points on 1 goal, and she got her first of her collegiate career on Saturday. So, good things starting off the season for good things starting off the season for the women's team on like I said, on Friday it was, excuse me, Cala, gosh, I'm sorry, I'm a little burpy right now. Calla Frank, the graduate student from Hugo, Minnesota, that picked up the win, stopped 12 shots on her way to the year's first win of the series, or of the series and of the season. And then on Saturday, it was the University of Minnesota transfer, University of Minnesota transfer. Gosh, I can't remember my name. Her name for my life. Let me double check. Olivia King, that stopped 10 of 12 shots for the second win of the season. So again, I love what I saw this weekend from the girls team. They had 16 different skaters register at least 1 point. Ella Berger registered one of the 2 power play goals that they got this weekend. And from my alma mater, Ella House, defenseman for the Tommies, got one of the game-winning goals for the Tommies. So again, lots of things to like this opening weekend for the women's team, and really, really hope they can build off this. This is the third and fourth game that they've played against Franklin Pierce, and they are now 3-1 against them. They won the first game against them last year, lost the second one in overtime, and then won these two, obviously. And then this upcoming weekend, they have Lindenwood on Friday, so 2 days from now at 6 p.m., and then Saturday at 6 p.m. as well. And this is another team that on paper they should be better than their first year. They got swept by them in a crushing overtime loss, 3-4 and then 1-4, but then last year swept them 4-1 and 5-3. So it'll be interesting to see how this year plays out. If last year is any indication, they could start off this season 4-0, which would be huge, all things considered, with the conference they're in, having to play the likes of Ohio State, the University of Minnesota, Wisconsin, UMD, St. Cloud State, and Minnesota State, Bemidji State, all 2 times. So, these 4 non-conference wins at the beginning of the season would be huge, and can't wait to see what they can build off of. So, with that, there's no really new news to report on for the basketball teams, which will lead us into the football portion of the Tommy Town. So not only did the Tommies become victorious this last see this last week, excuse me. Not only did they become victorious this last week and beat Dayton 20-14 to move 3-2 and a perfect 2-0 in the conference, but on top of that, Luke Herzog this last week was actually named defensive player of the week. Yes, you heard that correctly. He is the fourth Tommy to receive weekly honors this season. Herzog garnered his first PFL Defensive Player of the Week honor this season after a superb week in our 20-14 win over Dayton on Saturday. The senior linebacker filled the stat sheet in every way possible, tallying 6 total sacks, including 1 tackle for loss, 1 fumble recovery, and 1 pass breakup, and 1 quarterback hurry in the victory. Though he was kind of quiet in the first quarter, he did make a big impact. And usually every single game, you can tell where he is and who he is. So, you know, a huge, huge congratulations to him. And a huge congratulations to him. And this last game was a little different, as we kind of hung on for the 20-14 win. Like I mentioned, they marched out to a quick 20-0 lead, took a 20-7 lead into halftime, and then really didn't amount to much in the second half. But more or less, like I mentioned, held Dayton at bay. And it's worth noting the St. Thomas stellar defense has held its opponents to under 100 rushing yards for the second consecutive game. And as for the Tommies this last weekend against Dayton, they really leaned on the rushing game once again, as they actually only rushed for 23 more yards than they did passing. Tatioka passed for a total of 100 yards. And 2 touchdowns, 2 of the 3 touchdowns. But again, these Tommy running backs continue to have great, great games. Landon Reed, pounced on to the scene this last weekend. The junior from Naples, Florida, had 2 attempts for 40 yards. Or sorry, yeah, 2 attempts for 40 yards, led the team. Sean Shipman was right behind him with 38. Hope Adebayo had 25 yards. And it was actually the youngster, Gabriel Abel, who had the lone rushing TD. And then, once again, Andrew McElroy led the team in receiving yards with 39 and caught 1 of the 2 touchdown passes from Tech, the other from Jacob, tight end Wildermuth, and from there was able to garner the 3rd win of the season and 2nd in Pioneer Football League play. And the Tommies will now look to this next weekend, where they host Butler for their homecoming game, and will look to extend their Pioneer Football League play a record to 3-0. So kickoff for Saturday's game is scheduled for noon at O'Shaughnessy Stadium. Tickets are still available for the game. Pre-game festivities, Purple in the Plaza is back, it sounds like, and will be open 2 hours before kickoff for all Tommy home football games in 2023. Purple in the Plaza will feature a beer garden, popcorn bar, and yard games, including an inflatable field goal challenge. And this Saturday's game is actually sponsored by Twin Cities Orthopedics. Like I said, it'll be a fun game. This upcoming homecoming game is a very storied football program. We'll meet at O'Shaughnessy, as both the Tommies and the Bulldogs own over 600 wins in the history of their respective football programs. St. Thomas this last weekend won its 643rd game in program history, while Butler enters this weekend with 602 program wins, and it will be the Tommies' 3rd meeting with a member of the 600-plus club win this season, as they faced Harvard, who owns 893 wins, and Dayton with 701, which is an interesting little tidbit. And again, the run game on both sides will be apparent in this game, as the run game should take center stage, as 2 of the top running backs in the Pioneer Football League will square off to prove their dominance. St. Thomas's number 1 running back in Sean Shipman and Butler's Jiren Mitchell have taken the FCS by storm this year, as both rank towards the top in the nation in rush yards per game, total rushing yards, and single game rushing yards. Mitchell ranks second in the nation in total rushing yards with 653 and rush yards per game in 128.2, while he and Shipman both rank top 10 in single game rushing yard performance. And as impressive as Jiren Mitchell looks, is our Tommy run defense has been very unbelievable this year. Mitchell has yet, and it's worth noting, he has yet to face a run defense like the Tommies. Entering this Saturday's game, St. Thomas ranks 9th in all of the FCS in run defense, holding opponents to a mere 111.2 rushing yards per game. In fact, the Tommies held an opponent to under 100 rushing yards for the third time this season, holding Dayton to a mere 88 yards on 34 carries. So far this season, St. Thomas is 3-0 when holding its opponents to under 100 rushing yards and 2-0 in Pioneer Football League play. So that, you know, I think going forward, you'd love to see this offense kind of get going and be more prominent, because, you know, the Tommy stifling run defense is holding, like, opponents to next to nothing, but also they also force opponents to lose on average 34.4 yards per game through five games. I had to look this up because it's not like a known thing that, you know, they publicize everywhere for college football for sacks. But the St. Thomas defense has tallied 38 tackles for loss and 17 total sacks 5 games into the season. 17 sacks, by the way, is more than any sack and any team in the NFL through the first 4 seasons, 4 weeks, sorry, who has 16, both of which of these 38 tackles for loss and 17 sacks rank in the top 10 in the nation, which is a huge, huge thing for the Tommies. And they currently rank 6th in team sacks and 7th and team tackles for loss, highlighted by Tommy Shelstead, Luke Herzog, and CJ Warren, all linebackers for the Tommies. So can't wait to see what they have get cooking and get rolling for them. And then lastly, before we kind of go over the Gophers football, it was announced from Dr. Phil Esten, the St. Thomas Director of Athletics, as well as Fox 9 and Fox 9 Plus on back on Monday, that they announced the finalization of the broadcast schedule for the Tommy Athletics of this upcoming season. The local Fox networks will air 14 St. Thomas home events through the 23-24 academic year, including the XL Energy Center's hockey games against the St. Thomas Tommies and the Golden Gophers. The women's hockey, what is it? Let me take a look at these numbers again. So in addition to the XL Energy games, Fox 9 Plus will air 5 total games between football and hockey, and men's hockey, and then with women's hockey, and through 5 weekends, and then 2 will air in November, including, so essentially what it boils down to, they will be airing the last 3 home football games, or last 2 home football games, three, against Butler this upcoming weekend, Morris on October 28th, and then Valspario on 18th. And then for women's hockey, they will be against Minnesota on October 13th, like we mentioned, October 21st against Ohio State. And then the last women's hockey game will be on February 24th. For the men's hockey team against Minnesota, as well as that, the only other game will be against Minnesota State on December 9th. And then for basketball, the men's basketball team will it'll show them against Ohio Idaho State, sorry, on November 10th, and then Sacramento State on January 6th, women's basketball on February 3rd against Kansas City, and then February 10th against Denver, and then the last basketball game will be against the men's team taking on South Dakota on February 17th. So we will release this schedule and show it on our Instagram page tomorrow when we post for the podcast, so that everybody can be in the know on this as well. But that is what we have for the Tommy Town. As far as the Gophers are concerned, you know, they picked up a big win in their final non-conference game against Louisiana Raging Cajuns this last weekend, 35-24. Once again, just like the Tommies, had a day on the ground as they ran for 201 yards, this time actually being led by youngster Zach Evans, who had 85 yards and a TD on 15 carries. Bryce Williams also ran for a TD, as well as Ethan Kaliak Manis, and then he threw for TD, so he accounted for 3 touchdowns in the impressive win. And again, this was a game we expected this team to win. I didn't really think Louisiana Raging Cajuns were this good this year. I thought it was going to be more of a blowout, but hey, a win is a win nonetheless. You know, you look at how this schedule is constructed, and you would have loved to have seen them go into Northwestern and win that game, so that you can go into Michigan and you can lose the Michigan and or Ohio State game and still kind of be flirting with 9-10 wins. Unfortunately, you know, in a 12-game schedule, you've already lost 2 games in North Carolina, where I think a lot of people thought we would lose a close game. But now you're looking at potentially losing to Michigan State and Ohio State. And you do that, which, you know, that's no small feat as long as you keep it close. But all of a sudden, you're looking at 8 wins, which just isn't as appealing as 9 or 10. But hey, you know, they have a real opportunity after Michigan to really get after it. They got, you know, they unfortunately have to go to Iowa on October 21st. But then they host Michigan State, Illinois. They go to Purdue. Like, those should be three, four games, boom, 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 where they should win. But this upcoming game on Saturday, it's a primetime game, 6:30 on NBC Peacock against the number 2 ranked Michigan. You know, I don't like their chances of winning this game, but should they find a way to make it competitive, should they find a way to make it an interesting game and possibly win, I think this game will solidify PJ Fleck. It will give him another extension. It'll give this team probably not even a top 25. It'll probably give them a top 20, maybe even top 18 ranking in the nation. And then going forward, you kind of, you know, unless something dramatic happens, they're almost a religiously a top 25 team. Now, obviously, you still got to continue to win and beat teams that you should be beating. But I got to say, I picked this as one of the couple games I thought they would lose this in the preseason. I still have them winning, losing this game. I would love for them to prove me wrong, though. So that is what we have for our college sports segment this week. Now moving on to our beloved professional sports. And with that leads us to our next question to address from you beautiful fans. Devin wants to know, it's a multi-part question, but she wants to know, Jack, what are your thoughts on the wild card series over the Blue Jays, and what do you give their chances of advancing through the next couple rounds all the way to the World Series? And great question, Devin. Honestly, I have to say, being able to host a playoff series and having home field advantage, even though history wasn't on our side going into this, I liked our chances of having a three-game series at home to win two of them. As much as, you know, it pains to watch close baseball games, I was hoping they weren't going to be as close, and I truthfully thought it was going to be a full three-game series. I thought, you know, we'd probably get the first one, win the first one closely, lose a close one second game, and then close out in the third one. But, you know, nonetheless, super above anything else, super excited. You know, you have to go all the way back to, what was it, 2000? They were talking about an all series, but you have to go back all the way to 2004 in New York, previous to the last couple of days. You have to go all the way back to 2004 in New York, the last time we won just a single postseason game. And you have to go back even 2 years prior when we beat the Athletics in the ALDS, which is what we're about to be in now, for the last time we won a series. So this is huge. This is monumental for us. But before we dive too much into the Twins, kind of thought we'd go over a little bit of, you know, MLB playoff picture as a whole. So earlier today, the first team of the wild card series, as there are four taking or that took place, was the and the first one to advance was the American League wild card Texas Rangers, who dispatched of the home team. They were playing the Tampa Bay Devil Rays 2-0. Next was our very own Minnesota Twins, who took care of business, like I mentioned, against the Toronto Blue Jays 2-0, winning 3-2 yes on Tuesday, and then 2-0 earlier today. And then in the National League, the number three wild card team in the Arizona Diamondbacks also dispatched of the home hosting first wild card team in the Milwaukee Brewers. And then currently right now in the final game of today, it's looking like all four series will be sweeps, as the Phillies beat the Marlins back on Tuesday and currently have a 7-0 lead on the Marlins right now, heading into, it looks like, the eighth inning. So yeah, I gotta say, you know, immediately after we beat the Blue Jays, I obviously took a couple minutes to freaking relish in it and, you know, be super, super, super happy. But then very quickly kind of came back down to earth and started reading up on, you know, what you need to know about, you know, all the teams going forward and everything like that. And truthfully, Devin, you know, right now I gotta say ESPN's giving us a 46.7% chance of, 46.7% chance of advancing past the Astros, a 10.5% chance of their winning the World Series. And truthfully, if I'm being completely honest, I like our chances of beating the Houston Astros. And part of it is kind of twofold. One, we do, like everybody's been talking about this season, we led the American League at the end of the season and were third in the entire league in amount of home runs. So we have the bats to win, and we have the pitching to win. It's a matter of, are people going to stay healthy, and are we going to get the bats when needed and the pitching when needed? The reason I like us beating the Houston Astros, Devin, is because this is not the Houston Astros of 2002. In fact, I think the Houston Astros they played well. They had a great season, don't get me wrong. They finished, 90-72, which was, only a couple games better than us. But the reason I like it is because even though they have home field advantage, they actually fared a little better on the road this last season versus at home. Versus last season when they won the entire thing, they were virtually unbeatable at home. They were not great on the road, but they always did a great job of making sure they, stuck things and got things together at home. And like I said, I think Royce Lewis showed us in game one what he is capable of. If we can continue to get consistent hitting from him, that is awesome. It's tough though as you get deeper into the playoffs. I like our chances, like I said, of beating the Astros, but of getting any farther is going to be super, super tough. You're gonna have to beat a Baltimore Orioles team that had a historic season for the ages, and then you have to go up against the team. If you get past them, you got to go up NL team and the probably either the Atlanta Braves or the LA Dodgers. As great as the both those teams are, and they make it so lethal. Those teams just don't strike out a ton, and with one of the things that the Twins do well is Minnesota pitchers actually led the majors in strikeout percentage and ranked fourth in walk percentage this last season. So the strike zone is a dangerous place to be against the Braves and the likes of those top teams. So again, I like our chances. It's not going to be an easy season series. I like us to actually win this series in 4 games. I think we win 3-1, and I think we get it done in game. What's that? I think game one. It's an interesting layout. So the only game as of now that has actually no games. I was surprised. I thought they had a time. They don't. But for the Twins, the current schedule for them, time still have yet to be released, but they will be in Houston on Saturday the 7th and October the 8th, and then they will come home for at least Tuesday, October 10th, maybe Wednesday, October 11th, if it's necessary, and then also if necessary, Game 5 will be in Houston on Friday, October 13th. Like I said, US Target Field was electric. I like our chances of stealing a game in Houston and then coming back home and securing the bag in game four. If by some miracle we're able to get both games in Houston, I could see us getting things done on Tuesday on the 10th. But I'm gonna be realistic and say I think we win this one in four-game series. But Devin, I gotta say, I would be surprised if we make it 5-6 games against the Orioles. We just didn't play great against them this year. They're just a great team. I would love to see us, upset them. There's actually a really cool article about why, if you're looking for a Cinderella or a underdog team, you should be rooting for the Twins. All for that. But hey, I think this is a great step for this team. I think a lot of the reason that a lot of people had high hopes for this team this year, heading into last offseason, was because I think a lot of people thought we were going to get a lot bigger names in free agency. But when you have the 18 game, losing streak, Carlos Correa coming back because nobody else wanted him, that kind of stuff, it's tough. So being able to, after this year, say, hey, we got this young star power, we got some veteran star power, we won two playoff series, now come join us. It makes this a little more enticing, and I think the AL Central is going to be a little depleted for a couple years to come, so should rule in our favor. But yeah, keep an eye out. I would say as soon as tomorrow morning, there should be times for at least the first couple games for the series. excuse me, but nonetheless, super, super excited. I think it's super awesome. We got the dub and we advanced. But also, time to get back to work. Gotta take care of the Houston Astros and excuse me, go from there, as they say. So with that, the Minnesota Wild, not a ton of news to report on as the Minnesota Wild are concerned, but for, like I mentioned last week, the NHL preseason people is in full force. Be on the lookout. We are less than a week away. Tuesday, October 10th is the start of the new season. So super excited for that. The Wild are actually, as of right now, through their first what is it? For the through their first four games, four of their, I think they have six. Let me double check. Six preseason games, yes. And they're 3-1. Their only blemish is a 6-1 loss in Dallas. And yeah, I gotta say, up and down, the lineup, let's say look here, there are 19 players that have registered at least a point. Only Sammy Walker, Jahir Kihara, Kirill Kaprizov, have more than one goals. They all have two. And then Sammy Walker and Vinny Lettieri are tied for leading the team in points through the first four. For the first four games with 4 points apiece. Sammy Walker has two goals to assist with a power play goal, and Vinny has a power play goal that also proved to be a game-winning goal in one of the first two games. With that, you got Connor Dewar getting an OT game winner, Jonas Brodin getting a game winner. It's nice to see a lot of guys getting into the thick of things in preseason, and it's good to have a lot of people getting involved and having that problem of, we have too much talent. Who are we actually going to keep on our roster rather than, gosh, we just don't have enough. Who are we going to keep, kind of a thing. So, really cool to see. Wallstedt has only played in one game this preseason. He picked up the 4-3 win, their first preseason game. He stopped 40 saves against the Colorado team in their first preseason game. Colorado's two goalies didn't even see that many shots combined. The second game, Flower did start that game and stopped 20 of 23 shots in the first period and a half against that Dallas team that beat us. And then in just over the last 25 minutes, Gustafsson looked like garbage. He only stopped 8 of 11 shots. So not a great showing by him. But at the same time, their last game against Chicago, he picked up the win, stopping 23 of 21, 21 of 23 shots. So I don't know what they're gonna do for backup. I would say going forward, Flowers for sure gonna be a goalie number one. And then the only other, the second game against Colorado, we picked up the win on the back of Marc-Andre Fleury again, with stopping 25 of 27 shots. So again, it'll be interesting to see what happens this year with the Wild while they're currently in their last year of the quote unquote cap hell. But still a lot of good players to look forward to. We still got the likes of Alex Galgoski, Connor Dewar, Kirill Kaprizov, Matt Zuccarello, Jonas Brodin, Brandon Duhame coming back, and potential newcomers like maybe Sammy Walker. We could see a little bit of Adam Beckman, maybe Brock Faber a little bit more, Carson Lambos, who knows? So it'll be interesting to see what happens within the next week, even 2 weeks. And then the last thing I will say is, please be on the lookout. There will be by the end of Monday at the absolute latest, we will have a NHL preview podcast out for you guys. And then lastly, before getting into our football Vikings segment, we don't have a ton of news on the Timberwolves, but did want to let you guys know for our excuse me, for our Timberwolves slash basketball fans that the what is it? The NBA preseason is actually officially kicking off tomorrow, with the Abu Dhabi games, that'll kick off between us and the Dallas Mavericks. The first game will be tomorrow at 11 a.m. And then I believe the second game will be also at 11 a.m. on Saturday. And then after that, normal games should be popping up. There's I think a Canada series, a New Zealand, New Zealand's coming in to play a team, and stuff like that. So yeah, that's what we have. So now moving on to the Vikings and what happened in week four of the NFL season. So, I mean, looking around the league as a whole through the first four games of the season, the first thing that comes to mind is, obviously there's still two teams, both in the NFC, that still have yet to lose a game, the Philadelphia Eagles, San Francisco 49ers. Despite the Eagles, not quite looking like themselves so far, they've had a couple pretty close games that shouldn't have been close. And then on top of that, there are, excuse me, still only two teams in the league still looking for their first win, in the Chicago Bears and the Carolina Panthers, that are both in the NFC. So, already we're seeing, the AFC, there's just a lot more parity as everybody's already lost at least one game and won at least a game. But yeah, I guess a couple of the highlights that I took away from some of these games, from that Thursday night game, David Montgomery was a dog. As good as Detroit is, this offense is going to go as far as David Montgomery takes them. If he continues this up, they very well could dethrone the Vikings as NFC champions. But should he find a dry spell, or, God forbid, get injured, right now this guy is making this offense lethal. Jahmyr Gibbs looks fine, but he's just not getting the same touches, and it's just not David Montgomery. Jacksonville borderline lit up Atlanta across the pond. Miami looked a little bit like frauds this last week against Buffalo. A week after putting up 70 points, only amounted to 40 points in Buffalo. I mean, you look at that Chicago Denver game, the toilet bowl, some people were looking at that as, the Caleb Williams sweepstakes. And I think in that game we learned more that the head coach is the issue. I think it's Matt Eberflus or something like that is how you pronounce his last name. More than Justin Fields. Justin Fields balled out in that first half. He had some careless turnovers in the second half, but more than anything, the fact that Denver came back in that game and essentially outscored Denver or Chicago 24-7 to come away with that win tells me more about the play calling of that team than more than anything, because Justin Fields is still young in his career and is still very much a quarterback that takes the plays and isn't calling his own plays yet. Thank God Minnesota won this game. Philadelphia, like I said, barely stayed alive. Washington took them into overtime. Los Angeles had a big come from behind win too. They could be up there too. I think I speak for a lot of people when I say, the New York Jets, got robbed a little bit, and very similar to the Philadelphia Eagles, Kansas City Chiefs are not looking like the Kansas City Chiefs that won the Super Bowl this last year. So, and I guess, lastly, you take a look at that Monday game, and the Giants could be taking a huge step back this year after getting lit up by a injury ridden a little bit that defense from Seattle. So those were just a couple of the big highlights that came to mind after watching, kind of going through some of the games, looking at that kind of stuff. So yeah, so I figured, there's sorry, I kind of lost my notes here. So I know there's like now, just like with last year with the 17 game season, there's like no perfect halfway point, a quarter way point, or even like a third of the way point. But I figured four games, we'd start to look at some of, bold predictions that I gave you guys, for the Vikings, some of the picks I've already given you guys. So with that, let's just jump right into it. So far, I've actually kind of surprised myself so far. I try to do a good job of not, I'm just kind of taking week by week and then after each week kind of compiling it up. And I've actually kind of so far surprised myself. So far through the first 4 weeks, I've been 3 for 4. So at 75% with the locks I've given you guys. And then I'm 50% 2 for 4 in the Vikes games, as well as offensive and defensive predictions. And the one thing I really got to pick up my game with is my upsets. Only one of my first four upsets actually hit for you guys. And then I even threw in the other one. So, as for like the other games I've given you guys so far, excuse me, through the first, what's that, 4 weeks, I'm 7 for 12, so 58.3%, so above 50%, which I was surprised that was so high. I was thinking it was going to be closer to like 3 or 4 for 12, so that's pretty awesome. So with that, why don't we just jump right into, like we do every single week, the picks I have for you guys this week in good old, excuse me, week 5. So the lock we are going with on week 5 is going to be the Detroit Lions, who are 9-point favorites over the visiting Carolina Panthers this upcoming week, who are in a pretty precarious position heading into this week, still winless and seeking that first win. Look, like I mentioned, the Lions are they're hungry, and David Montgomery is gonna be hungry as well. I think their defense is playing well, and the running game, like I've been mentioning, is dominating. Jared Goff looks on point so far and faces a banged up secondary. It's also worth noting this is probably going to be another rough spot for Bryce Young on the road versus Aiden Hutchinson and Charles Harris rushing at him all game. So I got the Lions winning this one 30 to 17. And then my upset of the week this in week 5 is actually going to be the Jaguars, who are 5.5-point underdogs over the Buffalo Bills. Look, Josh Allen is red hot defensively for the Jaguars, coming off a 3-sack game against the Falcons. Well, Josh Allen for the red hot offensive is red hot offensively for the Bills, coming off a perfect passer rating with 5 total scores against the Dolphins. I think the Jaguars Josh owned the Bills Josh in a shocking upset 2 seasons ago, Jacksonville. That Jacksonville game, this is a rematch too, after winning in London last week and staying there. I think that's going to be a big positive and a big factor on Jacksonville's side. And I think very similar to, that game against Atlanta. I think a lot of people watched that game and said, man, these guys, they grinded through this game and they got the dub. And some people, you could look at that and say, hey man, they coasted to a pretty comfortable lead. But ultimately, I think he's going to grind through this Bills defense to make some big plays and get his team in a position to win late. And I think this could be one of his stamp games. This could be one of those games early in his career that early on shows you he's beaten a good team and he's on the trajectory to be in the conversation with, the Josh Allens, the Patrick Mahomes, the elite top tier quarterback. So I got the Jags winning this one and barely covering the spread. I think they're going to win 30 to 24. Now, before we get into the specifics of the bet, the interesting thing to note here is very similar to the Eagles game. So currently, the Vikings are 5.5-point underdogs to the Kansas City Chiefs, even though they're playing at home. So although I don't think the Vikings will win this game, I'm still going to, against the spread, I'm still going to bet the Vikings with the +5.5, because I really do think this is ultimately going to be another very close game that's just not going to go in our favor this year. It's going to be a 3 or 4 point game. So with that, We'll get into the specifics. If you place the three game parlay this week, we're giving you guys against the spread on the Vikings with +5.5 points, Detroit at -9 points, and Jacksonville at also +5.5 points. Placing a $100 bet would win you $650. So far to date, 5 weeks into this season, this would be the biggest bag you would win so far. $10 to win $65, and then $1 to win $6 and 50 cents. And then, you know, once again, I'll give you guys a couple other games that I like. For the second straight week in a row, it's going to start with, it's going to start with Thursday night football. Sorry, let me get my notes up here. It's going to start with it's going to start with Thursday night football with the Washington Commanders as 6.5 point favorites over the Chicago Bears. Sorry, let me find my stuff here. I like this game. I don't know why I just had that brain fart there. Again, Chicago is arguably one of the worst teams in the league. I don't know what their head coach is doing. I think this should be pretty easy game for the Commanders, and I would not be surprised if this was a double digit lead in favor of the Commanders. And then the second one I like is Cincy as 3 point favorites over the Arizona Cardinals. And then the one upset that I actually like this week, are just like last week. The Rams, as they are 4.5 point underdogs to the Eagles. You know, the Rams are actually in the exact same position, situation as Philadelphia is this week, where this could be, you know, a trap game for both. The Eagles were beating the Commanders in overtime. The Rams were busy beating the Colts in overtime. So it's clearly a trap game, like I said, for both. The reason I think it favors the Rams more is because Philly has to travel for this game. You know, through the first 4 weeks, the Eagles have surrendered 9 touchdown passes, which is the third worst number in the NFL. Only the Bears and Broncos have surrendered more. And as we all know, if you're mentioned in the same breath as the Bears and Broncos this year for any reason, that's almost certainly not a good thing. Another thing of noting, the problem for the Eagles is that their struggling pass defense gets a suddenly revitalized Matt Stafford. Last year, Stafford only had one weapon, Cooper Kupp. And when that weapon got injured, the Rams' offense virtually fell apart. This year, Kupp could be returning for this game. But even if he doesn't, he's got a new favorite weapon in Puka Nacua. Puka's got 39 catches so far this season, which not only leads the NFL, but is also an NFL record for the most receptions for a player for the first 4 games. So I thought I had to go probably into a little bit more specifics for this game for you guys, just because it highlights a team that could be losing their first game this week. So with that, we will go ahead and dive more into the Vikings. So very similar to like what I said too. So before we get into much of that, we can look at the 3 bold predictions I made for the Vikings this year. So the first was with the arrival of Brian Flores, on the defensive side of the ball. I said they were going to finish in the top 5 with most sacks on the year. Well, 4 games into this season, this defense has 11 sacks thus far, which is okay. Right now, it's middle of the pack. We're currently tied for 16th. And as a point of reference, the most any team has is 16, which only 3 teams have: the Bills, Chargers, and Seahawks. Look, one of the things I think for us to get back into this is to continue to bring pressure, but just to be more consistent with it. 4 games into the season, we have 2 5-sack games, 1 1-sack game, and 1 game with no sacks. So, you know, they don't have to hit home runs every single game. Not a lot of teams do. So if they can religiously be getting anywhere between 2 and 5 sacks a game, I think that's going to put them on a pretty good trajectory to finish in that top five. But individually, Mr. Danielle Hunter is in sole possession of 5th place in the entire league with 3 sacks, which is huge because only him and Harry, the hitman, have more than 1 sack on the team so far. And Harry's got 3. He picked up all 3 this last weekend, so hats off to them. Second one I gave you guys was at the end of the season, Ty Chandler will lead the Vikings in rushing, which I no longer actually believe since we went out and got Cam Akers, but I'm not going to be a bitch and be changing this one on you guys. That would be really stupid of me. I'm going to take this one on the chin. But I do believe at this point, by the end of the year, Cam will be our running back one. So with that said, as long as Ty Chandler outrushes Alexander Mattison by the end of the year, I'll be a happy man. I still won't have this good to go and sealed up and everything, but I'll be a happy camper. So yeah, and then my last bold prediction was that KJ was going to have more catches than Jordan Addison. Not as bad as I thought it was going to be through the first 4 games of the season, as Jordan's caught 13 balls on 20 targets to KJ's 8 catches on 17 targets. Again, which isn't bad, all things considered. We all knew going into this season, JJ was always going to be offensive target number one, and Hockenson was going to be number two, which is true to this case. JJ is first in both of those categories and targets and receptions, just like Hock is both number two in both those categories. So one thing I have noticed is not to bash either KJ or praise Addison by any means. They're both playing well so far. But honestly, just a simple observation from me, from watching all of these first 4 games, it seems to me like KJ's 9 incompletions are more due to him dropping the ball. So he should have more. Whereas Addison's 7 incompletions to me are more of over underthrows from Kirk. Again, just an observation, nothing to bash it, thus far. It sucks that we have a 1-3 record, but JJ's got a 70, a little over 70% complete reception rate. Hockenson's at an astounding 80.6%. Addison's at 65%, and Alexander Mattison, our RB1, is 66.7%. So, again, not where I thought I'd be, but there's still a lot of there's still a lot of there's still a lot of football to be played. So, needless to say, I'm looking forward to this Kansas City and San Francisco game. The last question I thought I would address for everybody, excuse me, is Sean wanted to know, Jack, would you rather, if we could only beat one team between the Kansas City Chiefs and then San Francisco 49ers, who would it be and why? And it's a simple question. And I've got to say, I would rather take the win against Kansas City now, because here's my thought process. My thought process is, if we lose this game and we're 1-4, and Chicago wins tomorrow night's game and they're 1-4, you could look at potentially going into week six, even though there's lots of football games to be played, to maybe take some of the starters out and maybe start working for a worse record. And then it just kind of snowballs from there. At least in my mind, if you beat Kansas City, you're 2-3, then you go to Chicago, one of the worst teams in the league. And hopefully by then you can bounce back 3-3, boom, boom. San Francisco is going to be tough. It would suck to bounce back down to 3-4. But then again, you look at Green Bay, Atlanta, New Orleans, Denver, and Chicago. Those are 5 games I thought we would roll through. And then based off of how Las Vegas is playing, that's 6. So we win Kansas City 3-4. All of a sudden you're 9-4 heading into the last 5 games versus losing to Kansas City and thinking about, already tanking 5 games through the season. So, great question, Sean. Like I said, I'll take the win against Kansas City now, just because I think, a win against the Kansas City team means probably a little bit more against the San Francisco team, just because Kansas City are the champs. you want to be able to say you beat the champs. You were a big reason for why they didn't get back to doing what they did last year. And I think if we find a way to beat Kansas City, that could really be the turning focal point of this season and could be the opposite of the team that started 5-0 and didn't even fucking make the playoffs. So that's what I got for you guys on that side. For predictions, like I said, it pains me to admit, I think it's going to be a bit of a shootout. I think we're going to come out firing. We're going to come out hot after our first win of the season. But ultimately, I think we're going to fall. I think it's, like I said, it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think it's going to be 38-35 in favor of the Kansas City Chiefs offensively. I was kind of looking at some of the notes, some of the things, and I think if you can get some of these Chiefs linebackers in coverage, you can win. I think getting some, two tight end sets out there, get Hockenson in space and one-on-ones with those linebackers that are depleted, and you can frustrate Chris Jones. I think we can give ourselves a chance to win, and I think by doing that, you hit Hockenson with a couple of those one-on-one coverages. So I expect us to highlight Hockenson. I think he has another big game, over 75 yards, at least a tutty. On the defensive side of things, I would love to get into creating issues for Patrick Mahomes, but I think our defense is going to limit Travis Kelce and make these not as great offensive wide receiver weapons Patrick Mahomes has had, and I think we're gonna hold Travis Kelce to under 50 yards on the game, which for a guy of his stature is going to be big. So I think we're going to shut him down. So yeah, that's what I have. I think it's going to be, a battle of the tight ends a little bit in this game. But I ultimately have us falling in a close one. So with that, I will leave you guys with, remember this podcast about you guys, the listeners. If you have a topic you want me to address or a question you want me to answer, please reach out on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, or by emailing us. Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram handles are at miniweekend, and email is miniweekend@gmail.com. That's MINNYWEEKEND @gmail.com. And be sure to let us know if you'd like to stay anonymous with your questions as well. Also, find us and give us a follow on Instagram and Twitter, where there are giveaways, and you can stay up to date on all things Mini Weekend. And lastly, make sure you hit that subscribe button to get notified of the new episode as soon as it comes out. Until next time, Mini.